Okay, so this quarter we've been studying one another. And up to this point, we've been talking about a lot of things that we do for one another. We honor one another. We show hospitality toward one another. Today we're going to talk about, the potential negative side of one another, and that's how we talk about one another. In James chapter 4, and man, you cannot see that very well. All right, James chapter 4. Verse 11, do not speak against one another, brethren. He who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, and you're a doer of the law, you're not a doer of the law, but a judge of it. We also see in James chapter 5 and verse 9, do not complain, brethren, against one another, so that you yourselves may not be judged. The judge is standing right at the door. We all know that words have a lot of power, but I think we sometimes forget that. Sometimes we may say some things that are just offhand. Have you ever had a conversation maybe about the preacher on the way home or the lesson? Is there anything wrong with that? No. But what are you saying, and how often do you say it? Are you saying, man, Josh did an outstanding job? Does that help or hurt? Obviously helps. But if your children are hearing every Sunday, you know, Josh missed this whole thing, Josh missed that, or, yeah, did you hear the song leader and the song leader, man, Marlon doesn't know how to lead. You know, those type of things on the surface may not seem like much, but over time, they really do have an impact. And they can have an impact immediately as well, but we need to be careful, need to be mindful of the words that we use and the words that we choose to use. Proverbs 25, verse 11 says it this way, like apples of gold and setting of silver is a word spoken in the right circumstance. Think back of your own experiences and have you been particularly encouraged by someone? And what was that encouragement? How did that encouragement come? Often it's saying the right thing at the right time. That is not an accident. We have to be thinking about those things. Where do our words come from? They come from what's inside us. They come from our thoughts. They come from what we have thought about over time. They come from what we study. That's one of the reasons that we try to spend 45 minutes this morning studying the Bible, right? And we should be doing it at home, studying ourselves as well, so that we have that reservoir to pull these things from. Because, again, it's just not going to happen by accident. There are times that we do need to speak up. There are times that we do need to say some things. But we need to be very wise and very careful in what those times are and in what we're selecting. And it's not only what we say, but also how we say it. And we'll get into that a little bit more in just a moment. Okay? So let's talk about grumbling. All right? Grumbling, the action or fact of complaining in a bad-tempered way. Okay? The words that we're going to be talking about this morning all has to do with things that we say. Right? All has to do with words. But even in that, there are things that we need to be mindful of. What grumblings do we think about in the Old Testament? Wandering, right? So remember what happened to the children of Israel? Man, we had it better in Egypt. Why did you bring us out here to die? We don't have any water. Why'd you bring us out here to die? We don't have any food. I'm tired of the manna. You know, just and when you think about that, how would you like to eat manna, the same thing, day after day after day? But yeah, what did God expect? He didn't expect them to complain about it, all right? And grumbling carries with it the idea of, not only are you complaining, but you've got an attitude with it, right? You're doing it in a bad way. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 10, it says, nor grumble, as some of them did, and were destroyed by the destroyer. Okay? So what's happening in the context here? In this context, verses 9 through 11, it says, Paul says, "Nor let us try the Lord, as some did, and were destroyed by the serpents, nor grumble, as some did, and were destroyed by the destroyer." Now these things happen as an example. They were written for our instructions, upon whom the end of the ages has come. What is Paul telling us? He's telling us, listen, learn from the mistakes of others. And in the broader context, in verse 6, he talks about evil things. In verse 7, he talks about idolatry. In verse 8, he talks about sexual immorality, testing of the Lord in verse 9, and finally in verse 10, grumbling. So look at what grumbling is associated with. Now, the real challenge is, if I went around the room and asked you, is grumbling a bad thing? Every one of us would say, yes. That's what Paul just said, that's a bad thing. The real question is, when you leave here today, will you remember it this afternoon? Why is this one, grumbling, complaining, murmuring, you can kind of group all those together, maybe all of the sins of the tongue, why are those seemingly so hard? Why do you think that? Do you think that? I do, but why is it so hard? Let me ask you this way. Why is it so easy to complain? That's a question. Now it's your part. Yep. Okay. What about maybe some more serious things? Maybe things aren't going the way that maybe Shannon and I make some decisions that you don't necessarily agree with. Not sinful things, we're not talking about doctrinal things, but wear a mask, don't wear a mask. Or, I don't know, go back out into the parking lot, services for a while and not going out for a while. That's just an example of some decisions. What about in those cases? How easy is it to complain in those situations?
Father, what we need to remember, there's not a perfect person in this building, and that includes me. Now, why do I grumble about somebody else if we're all a work in progress? I've never follow the perfect plan, but people are not perfect. So why are we grumbling? Look in the mirror.
In case you didn't hear, Joel, basically nobody is perfect. Why would we grumble about somebody else when we've got our own things to be working on? And again, I think that's what Paul's saying. We really need to listen. It's easy to criticize others when they're doing good. Instead of jumping in to help, some want to sit around and basically take shots at what others are doing. Go ahead.
I think that's also goes along with, you know, like what Joel said, you know, we're not perfect. And at the same time, we all have our own personal opinions. So those personal opinions sometimes go along with the grumbling and murmuring and complaining because, you know, we don't agree with one another, then it's easier to just complain about it. And sometimes we just have to sit back and think, okay, this is my personal opinion. They have their personal opinion. Let's just not argue or grumble about it, try to find that medium ground, or do you kind of get what I'm saying?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
We all have our personal opinions, and that kind of leads into, you know, it's easy for us to just grumble and complain and murmur because it's our opinion.
Yeah, I like blue, right? Because I'm wearing it today. I like blue. Some people don't like blue, they like green. You know, do I complain about your green because I like blue? You know, sometimes that sounds silly, but that's sometimes what we do. We do have opinions. Jared, I was trying to remember something you said about one of the good things about COVID is you were sitting at home all the time and something to the effect that everybody came around to your way of thinking that they had the same opinion you did, so it was great. So, you know, we like it when everybody has the same opinion we do. But there are times that that's simply not going to be the case. But how do we handle that? How should we handle that? If I have a disagreement, and again, I'm not talking about a doctrinal thing or a major thing, just in casual conversation, how should I handle those situations with somebody, whether they're a Christian or not? Go and talk to them, right? I don't know why that's one of the harder things for people to do. Just go and talk to somebody. Maybe you'll gain a perspective that you hadn't thought of, right? Maybe you'll learn something about that person as to why they think what they think. And it may change your way of thinking, okay? So don't go grumbling about it. So what happens when we grumble? How does it impact your home? Is it a place you want to be? Is it a place your kids want to be? Is it a place where you and your spouse want to be? Family? How does it affect where you work? Right? A little bit different dynamic. How does grumbling affect the people around you and you and your attitude at work? Yeah, poisons the whole well. That, somebody starts and somebody says, well, yeah, that's right, and they jump on the bandwagon. Now, again, there is a proper place that if things are wrong, if there is a problem, the way to handle that. Remember what we're saying about grumbling. One of the key things is complaining in a bad-tempered way, right? You're not handling it right. And it also affects us here at worship. If you have been grumbling, if you're not liking something, you're complaining about the parking lot, or you're complaining about maybe something more significant, how does that affect your worship? What are we going to do here in a few minutes? We're going to be taking the Lord's Supper. If you have that in your heart, if that's what you're dwelling on, if that's what's eating at you, how do you think that's going to go? Now, again, I can't see it. I won't know if that's something that you're wrestling with or not. You will. And it will affect the way that you worship. And it's going to affect those around you at times, depending on how much you express it. So Paul says it's about as clearly and directly as possible when he said in Philippians chapter 2, verse 14, do all things without grumbling or disputing. Don't do it. Yet, what do we do? There's few things that are so blatantly, do not do this. And yet that's one that we seem to struggle with at times. Again, not always, but it's a challenge. So I just want to challenge you this morning to think about what your responsibilities are. Are you doing this? Now, again, sometimes it's you think you're just pointing something out, but how you do it, the way that you say it, who you're saying it to, all comes into play, and we just need to be mindful. And again, it's not to say that everything's perfect, everything's working just fine, there's no issues. That's not the case. I think the whole point of it is how do we handle it? What is our attitude about it? Okay. Any other thoughts, questions on grumbling?
Following the idea of displacement, it would help to minimize probably it's difficult to do Philippians 4:6 and everything you think. It's difficult to do that if you grumble. And it's difficult to grumble if you're always going to think for it. And I'm not trying to say the idea of syrupy Pollyannaism. But it is a good idea to be a good one.
Yep. Yes, good point. Your Bob, this is very difficult for grumbling and being grateful in the same heart. Bob?
It's not easy.
Yes, it's not easy. That's absolutely true.
You mentioned the Israelites earlier. In Psalms
And, you know, again, grumbling is one of those sneaky things. You know, we don't realize we're doing it at times, but then if we do catch ourselves, we've got to stop. And that's not an easy thing to do, because sometimes we want to throw a pity party. Sometimes we just want to say, well, I just got to get off my chest. I got to say what I want to say. And again, I'm not trying to say that there is not times that we need to address things. But how we do that is vitally important.
Acts 6 talks about there was a complaint that arose from the Hellenists there in the congregation because they were being overlooked in the daily administration. And so there's an example of a complaint that needed to be made. Of course, we don't know everything about that, but I think that's sometimes where the difficulty, I say this for myself, where the difficulty is complaints that do need to be registered. But I do appreciate what you've got on the screen here about the grumbling. It's complaining in a bad-tempered way. It's about the intention behind it. It's about the tone behind it and those sorts of things. So it doesn't mean there's never a place to register a valid complaint, even against a brother or sister or what have you. It's just we just need to be careful that it doesn't cross over into grumbling and murmuring and those sorts of things.
Yeah. Very good. All right. Next one we want to talk about is lying. A lie is an assertion that is believed to be false, typically used for the purpose of deceiving someone. We all know what lying is. We're not going to spend, just for the sake of time, we're not going to spend a huge amount of time on lying. I think Proverbs 6, 16 through 19, there are six things which God, the Lord hates, yes, seven, which are an abomination to him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, a hand that sheds innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that run rapidly to evil, a false witness that utters lies, and one who spreads strife among brothers. So, again, lying is probably, I'm going out on a limb here, but probably the most common sin in the world, I would guess. So easy to do. It's often even encouraged. I used to travel when I was in France. The national pastime is, how do you cheat on your taxes? That's a form of lying, right? How do you hide things? How do you say, no, I didn't get 100, I got 50, you know, those sorts of things. There's cases where somebody may encourage a child to tell a little white lie to save somebody's feelings. And again, I don't think we need to go around hurting other people's feelings, but at what expense? We're not going to do it at that expense. Remember my dad telling me before I ever had Caleb that never lie to your children. Why is that significant, do you think? Lead by example. Okay. If my dad lied to me about little things, what am I going to suspect when he tells me something more serious? Can I trust it? Let me tell you, that is huge. I could trust my mom and dad. Even when they told me bad news, I could trust what they were saying. I knew that they loved me, but I don't know of any occasion where my mom and dad ever lied to me. Now, maybe. I don't think so, because it was such a big point in my dad's life, that he wanted us to be able to trust what he has to say. And that's something that we need to be mindful of. We know that if we lie, say our coworker sees us lying, how is that going to impact them? If we lie, what does it do to us? Then we got to start questioning, well, now, did that really happen or did it not happen? Right? I said this, and you know all those problems that generates. In Colossians chapter 3, verses 9 and 10, it says, do not lie to one another, since you lay aside the old self with the evil practices and have put on a new self who is being renewed to the true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. Jesus said it in John chapter 8, verse 44, that the devil is the father of lies, and that's not exactly the company you want to be known for or the company you want to be in. And that is to be a liar. So what does lying do in our relationships? What does it do to your relationship with your spouse? Trust. Yeah. Where were you I went to Kroger. You know, did I go to Kroger? Did I not go to Kroger? Is that a big deal? Not a big deal. You know, we have to be able to trust one another. What about with your coworkers? Again, all of these, I'm not going to ask all the same questions, but these do have an impact. If they see you lying to someone at work, what are they going to think when the pressure's on you're going to do to them? And this is, I think, universal. I mean, I think, I can't think of any situations where somebody would say, well, that's great, she'll lie to our boss, but she would never lie to me. I don't know, maybe some people think that way, but if you see the pattern, you see them lie to other people, you're going to assume they're going to lie to you, right? And how does that affect your relationship? Well, you may still be friends, you may still care about each other, but in the back of your mind, anything that's said to you, it's tainted. It's going to be, let me think, is that really true or not? Now, let's do the flip side of that. If there's somebody that you work with or you spend a lot of time with, and they always tell the truth, they go out of their way, you know, when they tell you something, how does that affect you? If they've got to tell you something tough, how does that affect you? Are you going to listen? Or are you going, he just says things? It does have an impact. And these, some of these are over time. Obviously, we know that lying is sinful. And again, what does that do to our relationship with our fellow Christians? It's much the same thing. It does definitely have an impact on us. Any other thoughts or questions about lying? There's lots more about lying. You know, did Abraham lie? Did God approve of Abraham lying? And all of those type of things. I won't spend time. If you'd like to talk about that, sometimes I'd be glad to do that. But Bob?
When Barnabas was really encouraging people to take that nickname, it strikes me that Paul told the truth all the time. Now, how can he be always building people up and always telling the truth? It might be to hear something negative. And I think part of that, there's a verse in Colossians that says, we're to speak with undeserved favor, season of salt, that we may know how we ought to answer it. Focusing on the positive, but telling what's needed and the best, building up the kind of like.
Yeah, how to be an encouragement. And again, sometimes being encouragement doesn't mean that you're always saying all positive things. It means that you're really got their heart at their interest at heart. I'll get it out. And you really want good things for them, and so you're going to tell them the things that they need to hear. Again, but you're telling them the truth, and you're doing it in an encouraging way. Okay? All right. Let's look at slander. Slander, the action or crime of making a false spoken statement damaging to a person's reputation. Now, again, are you lying about somebody? We know lying's wrong. Are you saying something about it? So this gets a little bit more granular, but again, it's sins of the tongue, of what we say. And again, we're not going to spend a huge amount of time on slander, but you can clearly see why God would not be happy with slander. It hurts everyone. It helps no one. At times, slander is translated speaking evil of someone, slandering somebody. So in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 20, for I am afraid that perhaps when I come, I may find that you may not be what I wish, and may be found by you to be not be what you wish, that perhaps there will be strife, jealousy, angry, tempers, disputes, slanders, gossips, arrogance, disturbances. Why would a Christian possibly slander a brother or sister in Christ? Can you think of any situations where somebody would want to do that?
The disagreement over a matter, sometimes one may slander the other to bolster his personal position to tear the other down.
Yeah, sometimes we want to be so right that we're willing to do a wrong to be right, right? You're willing to try to make somebody else look less so that your position looks better. Jimmy? What we know is there is no situation where it's okay, right? Why would somebody do it? Selfishness. I want to look good, so I'm going to make you look bad. By you looking bad, it makes me look even better. Some of those situations. Maybe it's jealousy, right? Maybe, somebody's just has a better personality and they have people that are they're closer to. Maybe I'm jealous of you, and so I'm going to say some bad things. I'm going to plant some seeds, right? Well, I don't know. Shannon's not that great guy that you think he is. He is, but. Or, you got to watch Josh. You know, he says the right things when he's up there, but I don't know. I saw him the other day, and I'm not sure where he was, but wasn't a good place. You know, planting those seeds of doubt. Slandering somebody, saying things that you know aren't true, so that you are looking better. Okay? Other thoughts about slander?
I think one of the easiest and most common one that I have to think about is looking at action versus intent. We can slander people by saying, well, they were thinking this, or, well, they don't really love God, and that's why they're doing this. And their intent, we don't know unless they tell us their intent. We can look at their actions. Their intent is something we can slander very easily, whatever the situation is.
And I think that's the key to what Jeannie was saying earlier. How do we get by some of that? Go and talk to somebody, right? Try to understand where they're coming from. Now, again, that doesn't mean in every case they're coming from the right place, but it sure is helpful. We don't have to guess, right? We know, and that's a good way to deal with it, okay? All right, put your feet out and get stomped on. Gossip. Casual or unconstrained conversation or reports about other people, typically involving details that are not confirmed as being true. All right, so this is one of those that's, some people might like to call it a gray area. You may be saying something that's, you don't know if it's true or not, I heard, but why would you repeat something like that? Typically, when somebody is gossiping, why are they doing that? Besides maybe being bored. To impress someone. I've got information. I've got inside information. Or maybe it gets a little bit into slander that, I heard it's true. Don't know, but this is what I heard about so-and-so. And so, again, it makes me look a little bit better. You cast a little doubt on them. In some ways, I just can't imagine doing that. And in other ways, I look at my life and I said, have I done that? I'm sure I have. I know I have. I confess that I have. Try not to do it anymore. But when you think about it, how easy is that to do? Why is gossip warned about so much? Do you think? Impacts everybody, right? Who you're talking about, who you're talking to, it impacts you, right? Impacts yourself. If I said, don't murder, don't commit murder, what immediately went to your mind? That was, no question, right? We don't spend a lot of time talking about you don't need to murder. Why? So obvious. Very few of us would be tempted to commit murder. If you have teenagers, I'll set that aside for a minute. But we don't have, typically that's not one that we worry about, right? But what about these warnings about gossiping? Proverbs chapter 11, verse 13, he who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets, but he is trustworthy who conceals a matter. Talebearer, gossips, talking about things. So before you ask or say anything, you need to ask yourself, is it true? What's the person's history been? Do I know this person? Is this out of the norm? Do I normally see this type of behavior or comments or these type of things from someone? Is it true? Is it going to help someone else? Why am I telling it? Right? Just because it's true doesn't mean you have to tell it. Right? I'm not saying hide it, not saying lie about it, of course. But just because something happens, just because something is true, doesn't mean you've got to spread it. Doesn't mean you've got to tell other people about it and just be wise in telling it. Is it necessary? Is it helpful? Would I say it in the presence of that person? That, to me, is really an acid test. Would I say it in front of that person? If the answer to that question is no, don't say it. Right? Because if you're not willing to talk to them about it, then you don't need to be telling anybody else. And again, that gets to the point of being able to hear firsthand what the story may be. And again, it doesn't mean that what they're saying isn't true, and it doesn't mean that something doesn't need to be addressed, but it's not helpful to talk to everybody else, not talk to the person individually. So which one of these would you want to be known for? Gossip, being a whisperer, a talebearer, a backbiter, or a busybody? I should have put on there, what did that be, D or 6, none of the above, right? But if you think about that, how do you get to be known as a gossiper? By doing it, right? By being a gossip or a whisperer or a talebearer, all pretty much the same thing. A busybody, paying attention to things that you don't need to be paying attention to. So again, we can see the warnings that we get here. Kick it in gear a little bit faster. Profanity. Okay, so again, sins of the tongue. Profanity is blasphemous or obscene language, right? So the obvious one, don't use the Lord's name in vain, right? That's from the Ten Commandments. You don't want to profane the Lord's name. Out of that comes other things that we might say. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29, let no unwholesome words proceed from your mouth, but only such words as good for edification according to the need of the moment, so that it gives grace to those who hear. Okay? So what would be included in unwholesome talk? What are we talking about? I thought of you and the Kentucky cussing. Cussing, cursing, right? What else? A couple of guys get together. Hey, let me tell you about this. It's so funny. Maybe a little dirty joke, a little off color, not quite, you know, you wouldn't want your wife to hear. Obviously the biggest one, taking the Lord's name in vain. What makes a cuss word a cuss word? We don't have time for that this morning, but you ever thought about that? Being offensive. It's amazing. We know there are words that we just don't use, right? Why? Because they're not wholesome. They're not helpful. You know the meaning of those words, the context that you're saying them in. We need to be careful and be mindful of what we say. And again, it's the emphasis is on our attitude about it. And what are we trying to, what message are we trying to get across? Are we trying to be an encourager? Or in those cases, is that going to discourage or encourage? I don't know of any situation where cussing is going to encourage anybody. Right? You may bully somebody into something, but you're not going to encourage them to do what's right. You're not going to help them. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 3 and 4, but immorality or any impurity or greed must not even be named among you as is proper among saints. There must be no filthiness or silly talk or coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving thanks. All right? So again, what is he telling us? Be careful with the words that you use. It's important.
And it's so easy now. Like, I mean, it's just so common for people to use the Lord's name in vain. Like, it just blows my mind. Like, you know, people at how easily it is for people to do that. I mean, it's, I think of, like, Patty, some of her movies that she's watched, like Disney movies or even cartoons where it's going great, everything seems good, and then all of a sudden they say the, you know, the acronym, the OMG.
Yep. Yeah, I had a boss who was college educated, very bright guy, very intelligent, and just cuss. And it's just like, why? You know? And I asked him one day, I said, why? And he said, oh, that's just the way, he's from Chicago. He said, that's just the way we talked, right? So he didn't mean anything by it, but boy, it was, could get rough at times. It was very hard, right? And so we just got to be mindful. I don't know why every HGTV reveal, that's got to what comes out. So you just learn to mute that section when they show the houses. I ran across this. I wasn't looking for this, but I ran across it. And it just popped up on me yesterday, and I thought, wow, how true. The tongue has no bones, but it is strong enough to break a heart. So be careful with your words. Careful with your words, because it is vitally important for us to think about it. So I want to get some comments from you. Matthew chapter 12, verses 34 through 37, you brood of vipers, how can you who are evil say anything good? For the mouth speaks from the heart what it's full of. A good man brings good things out of the good stored up in him, and an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in him. But I tell you that everyone will give an account on the day of judgment for every empty word they have spoken. For by your words you will be acquitted, and by your words you will be condemned. This is probably one of the most chilling verses for me in the Bible. Because we don't think what we say really matters that much. You know, sometimes when you're talking to your kids, you just think, why did I even say that again? But the reality is, our words really do matter. I'm not a big talker. I know it may seem like it when I'm teaching, but that's what a teacher does. But in a casual setting, I just don't say a lot. I don't like to say a lot. I like to sit and listen. And this passage is part of the reason for that. Part of that is my nature. But knowing that I'm going to have to give an account for every word, it's like, maybe I need to hold some of those back. Now, there's a time, again, that it's appropriate. We need to be saying something. But that's what I think it means by your words, you'll be acquitted, because you spoke at the right time. You said the right thing. You said it in the right way. Okay? Got 5 more minutes. Okay? Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29. That no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear. What is this passage telling us? What do you think? What words are we supposed to use? Encouraging words, right? What's needed at the moment. And why? What is it going to do for the person who hears it? Build them up. How does it say it here? That it will give grace to those who hear. What does it mean to give grace to those who hear? If somebody says to you, you know, you're kind of beating yourself up. I should have caught this. I should have done that. Man, why am I so dumb? And somebody will say, give yourself some grace. What do they mean by that? Don't be hard on yourself, right? Don't hold it against someone. Give grace. Grace to the hearer. It's helpful to the hearer. They're not walking away going, you're right, I'm the dumbest person in the world. Now, again, there are appropriate times, and you've got to say it appropriately, there are appropriate times to address issues that people are having or doing or sin. That is not what we're talking about. In this case, it's talking about edification. And even in those cases where we've got to address sin, we've got to do it in a way that helps them see what they need to do, not just simply beat them down. Okay? So maybe ask yourself, is what I'm about to say going to help or going to hurt? And it's easy to talk about that in class, and it's easy when you've got 5 seconds to think about it or 10 seconds to think about it. It's really hard when you don't have, when your emotions are involved and you're just firing. And I often think of kids and some things that I said to some of my boys, and I wish I could take them back. I can't. So we've got to be careful, and we've got to be mindful, right? We're not going to do it right every time, but that's what we need to be striving for. And again, giving grace to those who hear. All right. Let's see. James chapter 2, verses 3 through 12. James is probably the most common place we go to for sins of the tongue or thinking about it. James chapter 3, verses 3 through 12. Now, if we put bits into the horse's mouth so that they will obey us, we direct their entire body as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are great, they are driven by strong winds or still directed by a very small rudder, wherever the inclination of the pilot desires. So also the tongue is a small part of the body, and yet it boasts of great things. See how great a force to set aflame by such a small fire. The tongue is a fire in the very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members is that which defiles the entire body and sets on fire the course of our life and set on fire by hell. What is James trying to tell us here? What does he want us to understand? Something we probably already know. How powerful the tongue is, right? Why is he telling us this? We misuse it. Be careful. Be mindful. And that requires effort on our part. It's really easy to sit back and just let fly whatever comes to mind, right? It takes discipline for us to stop and to think about what we're going to say. It takes discipline to say, let me think about that. Let me choose a better word. Let me choose something a little different, right? So, again, that's very difficult. It's very challenging. But I want to end on a positive note. We're out of time, but I'm going to read it anyway. Titus chapter 2 and verse 1. But as for you, speak the things that are fitting for sound doctrine. In Ephesians chapter 4, 15, 16. But speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects into him, or is the head, even Christ, from whom the whole body, being fitted and held together by the every joint that supplies, according to the proper working of each individual part, causing the growth of the body for the building up of itself in love. What we say matters. We've established that, but there's a number of ways that it can be used in a bad way, in lying, in gossiping, profanity, grumbling, all those and more. But the tongue can also be used for a very good thing. Ephesians chapter 4, 15, 16 tells us to use the word to build each other up, to be an encouragement to one another, and to help each other. And that's what we need to be doing. So be careful what you say, be mindful of what you say, and know that it can be good things as well. All right. Thank you.